only chants that I chant at the retreats. I don't know if Durga has been chanting it or not. Is the one that goes Anicca Vata Sankara Rupadava Yodamino Rupakitua Niruchanti Tesang Rupasumo Suko. And in English, this is approximately all compounded things, all fabricated things are impermanent. They have the nature to arise and to pass away. Those who can see deeply into this truth will live happily. Some people have said that Buddhism is just one big meditation on impermanence. Impermanence is being very central to Buddhist tradition. And pretty much everything that we know about is a compounded thing, it's a fabricated thing. It's come into being because of causes and conditions that come together in a certain way to make them possible. And because they arise, they're born, they're produced, they sooner or later will die or pass away or disappear. And this is, you know, part of what it means to be fabricated, to be a thing in the world. To be a thing in the world is to be a process of change, to be, have a beginning and a middle and an end. And it's maybe a little bit of an illusion, maybe very much an illusion, that the way we speak, we talk about things as nouns, as things. We make concepts about things, and the concepts have a feeling to often connected to them that things are somewhat permanent. They're kind of, they're solid, they're unchanging. Rather, all things, except for Nibbana, except for the unconditioned, the unfabricated, all things that we know about in the normal experience are processes, constantly in motion, constantly moving, flowing, arising and passing, being born and dying. I've been stressing concentration these first days of the retreat, and one of the purposes for developing concentration is that is so that we can see very precisely how our experiences of life, experiences of ourself, arise and pass moment by moment, to see very precisely the changing nature of experience. When the mind is really busy, really active, the mind is agitated and busy, the mind, in a sense, is moving faster than the body, our physical experience. And so it's very hard to see the moving qualities of our physical experience, the impermanent flow of it, from the perspective of a mind which is very busy. Even if it has the best, most wisest, most enlightened thoughts or ideas are held in that mind, as long as its mind is busy and active, it's very hard to see the movement of something which is stiller than it. And one of the functions of concentration is to let the mind become stiller and quieter. So the mind becomes really still, really quiet. So, and the quieter the mind becomes, the more we see clearly the tremendous flow of impermanence, the flow of change that's going on all the time. So Buddhism is, in a sense, one big meditation, big reflection on impermanence. And one of the things we're doing in meditation practice is beginning to open ourselves up, be sensitive to the changing quality of our experience, the process quality of our experience, how experience changes and moves, how it's in flow, how things are not concepts. And I think, as many of you know, one of the really key aspects of Vipassana practice is to learn how to distinguish between the concepts that we live our lives by and how things are actually directly in our lived experience. Certainly our interpretations are sometimes wildly distant from what's actually going on, but concepts sometimes are closely related to what's going on. And so we feel that there must be some reality to them. There must be some real thing there. But actually, if you look really closely at concepts, what's behind a concept, when it's pointing to something in the world, not just in a complete abstraction, the actual experience of it, you'll see, is arising and passing moment by moment. So, for example, sitting here on retreat and maybe have knee pain. In the abstract world of the mind, the pain gets solidified. Oh, it's my pain. It's the pain. That pain is there. It's going to be there forever. It's going to be there at the end of the sitting. It's going to, you know, this is it. And a very solid feeling to it. And we add the concept that, you know, my pain. And then there's all these associated thoughts that go into what it means to have my pain, what's going to do for me. But in having some resistance or seeing and feeling the pain from a distance, we don't actually go into it and feel how that pain is a process of change. How it's an event that's moving, it's not a thing which is solid and stable and unmoving. All our experiences are constantly moving and in process and flowing. And part of what the Vipassana practice is about is becoming sensitive to the changing quality of our experience from moment to moment. Now, it's not exactly sitting down and looking for change or looking for impermanence. It's not holding the idea, oh, impermanence is a great teaching of Buddhism and I need to understand everything through this category of impermanence, apply it to everything. In Vipassana practice, what it is more is we're trying to develop our sensitivity to be refined enough and sensitive enough so that impermanence jumps out at us. So we really see, oh, moment by moment, things arise and pass. Now, on a very coarse level, this can be experienced with the breathing that we focus on. The inhalation arises, it passes, makes it possible for the exhalation to begin and to end. And it goes on like that, rising and passing and rising and passing. And the breath is not the breath as one thing, but what we call the breath, our breathing, is a process. And as we concentrate on the breath, on the breathing, we're concentrating on a process of change, a process of flow and development, unfolding. And if we have, you know, it's very easy to kind of make a concept of my breath and then start living in the concepts of it as if that's, now we know what it is, we understand it. My breath is too shallow, my breath is too this, my breath is too that, my breath is too controlled, my breath is too red, my breath is too, you know, purple, whatever. And it, oh, this is the way things are, this is what my breath is. And lose track of actually how things have changed quite a bit because we've gotten involved in the idea of what it is. Same thing with our sitting or meditation or walking practice. We might get a concept or idea, oh, this is the way it is. I'll never be able to do this. I'm a hopeless meditator. Or this is it. I've arrived. This is what it's supposed to always be like. And then, of course, what happens in the next sitting or the next minute? Things change. And so we start relating to the idea, oh, this is the way it is. And we lose track of the fact that things are continuing to unfold and change and develop and go on. It's kind of, the analogy is kind of like you go to a river, you take a bucket of water out of the river, and you walk around and say, this is the river. And the river keeps flowing nicely, thank you. And the river is not the bucket of water. It's just a bucket of water at that point. It's not the river. So we do that with our concepts and ideas. And part of the training of Vipassana is to learn to let go of those concepts, or see through them, see the transparency of them, and begin seeing the process nature, the process flow, the process of our actual moment-to-moment experience. So in a coarse level, it's easy to see how the breath arises and passes, but as the mind gets more refined, more concentrated, we become sensitive how the breath is made up. Each inhalation is made up of a process of different sensations. And you might be aware of 2-3 sensations, perhaps, in the course of an in-breath. Movement, pressure, tautness, expansion, warmth, tingling, vibration. Sometimes it's possible to be aware of dozens of sensations that kind of ripple through just on inhalation. Someone who has a street consciousness couldn't imagine that there's so much to be aware of in the breath. But sometimes, as the mind gets more refined, we see that actually the breath is made up of, in-breath is made up of a lot of sensations. And each of those sensations has a beginning and an end. It arises, it's there for a little while perhaps, and then it passes away. It's a constant process. The in-breath is not just one thing. It's a process of change in and of itself. Now, one of the wonderful things begins to happen when we relate to change, something changing and flowing, like the breath, is that when the mind is relating to something which is changing and moving in our experience, it's very difficult for the mind to fixate on something, because the mind only really fixates on concepts. It doesn't fixate on direct experience, because direct experience can't be fixated on, because it's constantly flowing and changing. We might think we're fixating on something, a thing, in our direct experience, but when you think you're doing that, you're holding yourself actually a distance from it and experiencing it through the filter of your concepts and ideas. But when you start feeling something that's flowing and changing, it's very hard for the mind to be fixated. Occasionally, once or twice, I've counseled someone who was quite psychologically ill, very psychological difficulty. And there's one person, and she had to go somewhere in the bus. And it was a little bit dangerous for her, what her mind would do to herself. And I told her, when you ride in the bus, look out the window at things that you pass by in the environment, and keep your eyes constantly moving to something new all the time, just moving around. So the eyes are constantly moving. And when the eyes are constantly moving like that, I knew that she would be very hard for her to fixate on any of these problematic ideas that she was going to hold on to, and that we could take her down some kind of dead end. When we can really kind of rest in things that are changing and flowing, kind of really be present for it, we don't get hung up. Or fixated is a very good word. Fixated on something. The Buddha once said, or said many times perhaps, the Dharma is good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end. It's the practice, the path is good in the beginning, it's good in the middle, and it's good at the end. And part of this is that the beginning, middle, and end of the path is intimately connected to letting go of our fixations, letting go of our graspings, letting go of that which we hold on to and cling to for dear life or whatever. And it's really good to let go. So the process of letting go or fixation happens at all kinds of different levels of practice. You don't have to be ahead of yourself thinking, oh, I have to get really deeply concentrated to do the work of Dharma. It's good at the beginning, it's good at the middle, and it's good at the end. So we begin looking at the breath more carefully, being present for it, feeling it, sensing it, surrendering to the breath. Not to the concept and idea of it, not to the image or visualization we have of the breath, but to the actual moment-to-moment experiences that make up the process of breathing, the flow of breath, the breath sensations, So they can start seeing the impermanent nature of it, the changing nature. Now, in the Satipatthana Sutta, the discourse on mindfulness that the Buddha gave, one of the instructions around mindfulness of the body that can be very helpful to kind of understand the process nature of our experience is the instructions to pay attention to the four elements, sometimes called the Mahabhuta, the great elements. And the four elements, I don't know if elements is the best translation into English, but that's what we say because it kind of relates to our idea of elements. But it's called fire, water, air, or wind, and temperature. No, fire, water, air, and earth, the four elements. And the instructions in the sutta is to begin paying attention to the four, our experience, our physical experience, from the point of view of the four elements. Now, what this means, the elements are kind of symbolic for the four different categories of how physical experience can be experienced. It can be experienced from the point of view of solidity and weight and hardness and softness, which is the earth element. It can be sensitive to the point of view of hot and cold, which is the fire element. Be aware of it from the point of view of movement, of flow, which is the air element. And then you can feel it in terms of cohesion, the way the liquid quality of water kind of holds, it's kind of held together, sort of cohesion. You can feel the flow of liquid, or the cohesion of liquid, the cohesiveness of things. It's said that the water element is the hardest to experience, the most. You don't feel that as often as the other three. But to start feeling, oh, this sensation here is made up of hardness, of heaviness, of softness, of pressure, of a sense of cohesion, resistance, tautness, vibration, movement. There are particular processes involved. Maybe even say hardness is maybe not the right word, because it's maybe even that's too much of a noun, perhaps too much of a suggests something stable. But a process of hardening, a process of weight. And what we're asked to do with mindfulness of physical experience is to begin feeling and sensing very intimately what is the direct felt sense of the way we experience life. The physical way in which we experience our physical life. One Zen teacher that I had gave the instructions for meditation. Said, surrender to your senses. I had wonderful double meanings. But surrender to your senses, I think he meant mostly the physical senses. What is the experience of life in the direct sensory way? If you feel it's a sensory quality of life, you find it as a process, that it's processes you feel, processes that arise and pass. Now, in the teachings of the Buddha, this is called the rupa, the four qualities of rupa, of form. And he used the word form, rupa, which is a little bit different meaning than a body in English. Because in Buddhist practice, in Buddhist teachings, the focus is not on how things actually are out there as realities, in a sense. But the focus always is experiential. How do we experience reality? And to be there really present for how we experience things. And so when the Buddha talked about the rupa, the form, he was talking about how we experience our physical life. And how we experience our physical life is constantly a process of change. Things rise, they pass. Some things seemingly they rise and they stay for a long time. Cold arises. It seems to last all night and well into the afternoon. But if you actually look very carefully at the experience of cold, you'll find out that it's made up of a lot of different kinds of sensations and feelings in the body. What often we say cold, and it's a whole gestalt of experiences. We mean I'm cold. We mean that we're tense, we're shivering, there's sharp feelings that are kind of cutting into the body. There's thoughts and ideas and memories associated with it. There's many things that make up the experience of being cold. And if we stay at the abstraction of cold, it might seem like this is it, it's solid. But as we kind of relax ourselves into feeling it actually how it is, more directly and intimately, what you probably find is that the particular elements that make up the experience we call cold are actually constantly in flux and changing. They actually arise and pass over and over again. They don't stay solid, they don't stay put at all. You might stay cold through time, in a sense, but the little sensations of cold in your body actually moving around the body. Sometimes you feel it, you know, maybe you feel it, you know, kind of in your chest. But it's not just your chest. If you actually pay attention carefully to the cold sensations in your chest, they're kind of actually moving around there. They're not in one single place. The experience of cold in the chest is made up of a whole series of changing sensations that arise for a moment and then disappear. Another one rises for a moment and then disappears. The direct felt sense experience of life, when we feel it carefully with a very still mind, is seen as processes of change. And as we begin feeling that process level, as I said, it becomes harder and harder to fixate on something and hold on to the concepts of how things are. One of the great places where many meditators experience this is an experience of physical pain. Not that I want you to have pain, but when pain does arise, you can certainly ignore it. Some people ignore it and kind of just sit with their breath and just ignore it and just is there. But in Vipassana, at some point, if pain is strong enough, we really take it as the object of attention. We really go into it and feel it really intimately for what it is. And we drop below the concept idea of it. And you see that even though the pain, in a general way, kind of stays through time, in the immediacy of the experience, there's a lot of space between the pain sensations, temporal spaces between them. They rise and they pass. There's a dance and sparks. They move around within that square inch or that knee or whatever. They move and they rise and pass. What is your pain? Who are you? What is your pain? What is your experience in between the passing away of one spark of pain and before the rising of the next one? You might see there's a lot of space between all that processes. And to start seeing the process level, things arising and passing, means that we don't... It tends for most people to become a lot easier to be present for it. It's a lot harder to be present for it when we take it to be a solid thing. One of the great reliefs about being in the four elements, just feeling the physical experience of the body, how the body experiences itself, is that we hopefully begin letting go of issues of self-image, self-representation. This is how I'm supposed to look. This is what I want to look like. Or this is, you know, this is what's wrong with that part of my body. But rather we actually experience the lived life, the lived experience of how it's actually lived in the moment. The fact that the Buddha talked about the four elements, the rupa, as being how we experience our physical life as opposed to what physical reality actually is, means that our experience of rupa, of earth, air, water, and fire, are inseparable from our experience of being alive. They're an expression of being alive, expression of our vitality, of our awareness and senses that are alive and present and sensing and feeling. However, one of the marvelous things is to begin getting a sense of how these various sensations that arise and pass physically, how they're not you. they don't really qualify. This is me. If you get cold and you go out and stand in the sun and you feel the heat element, the fire element kind of coming against your cheek, is that heat you? Are you creating it? Are you doing it? Is that who you are? Or is it just because of the conditions of being in the sun that you feel the heat? The heat is just there, just a process which is there temporarily. A mosquito lands on your forehead and you feel the itching there. Is the itching you? Did you create it? Did you make it? It's just a coming together of conditions that create itching. I think there's a marvelous way, a very freeing way, of when we kind of start staying present for the arising and passing of sensations, that you can feel that they're not really personal. They arise and pass because of conditions are changing around you. And so things arise and pass, and sensations. And there's a wonderful impersonal nature of many of these sensations. And it can be a great relief to just be present for this impersonal show and display of sensations. Sometimes this term, Mahabhuta, the great elements, is sometimes likened to a magic show. It's a magical display that arises and passes without our doing anything. And perhaps it's a greater magical display than we realize. Because it's not so clear that our sensations of reality are the accurate representation of what reality is. Our eyes see a certain wavelength of light. If we had other wavelengths of light, we would see things very differently. There's real contact, there's real experience there. But is that giving us real, reliable, true information about what we're seeing, what it really is in itself? If we had to describe our seeing of a flower to a bee, would the bee have any clue of what we're talking about? The colors of a flower? They see things through a different wavelength. So what is our direct experience? And to come back to that over and over again, the four elements. The sensory quality of life, the felt life, the embodied life. As a way of softening up our tremendous involvement with concepts and ideas, and fixating on things and ideas of permanence. And of course, one of the strongest and most painful fixations we have is that of self, who I am, who I should be. And the great thing is, as we start feeling the process level, it's very hard to hold on to any fixed concepts or ideas of who we are. We kind of get out of the way, we take those concepts out of the way, in order to experience the flow and the change that's constantly happening. So for some people in practice, it's useful for them to actually suspend, maybe out of an act of faith, suspend their conceptualization of how things are. Kind of put to rest for a while how we create ideas that are fixed and permanent. This is the way things are. This is how it is. But rather to begin sensing how things are occurring as a process. And for right now, at this point in the retreat, the primary thing I'm suggesting is that you start noticing that process level, the changing aspect of our experience in the very breath itself. So that as you stay present for the breathing, that the kind of the presence we give to the changing sensations of breath are helping us continue to cultivate our concentration. Or maybe we should say it, our concentrating. So we don't make concentration to something. And as I said in yesterday's talk, it's really important to also see the concentration itself as a rising and an ending. It gets stronger and weaker in the course of a day, maybe many times. And part of one of the things we're doing with Vipassana practice is learning how to be comfortable with change, how to be at ease with change. I remember some years ago I was working with a woman who had a lot of fear. And anger and various. We did a guided meditation. And she was pretty attached to her anger. She kind of really saw it as being who she was and who she needed to be in order to kind of negotiate in life. And so we did this guided meditation. And I asked her to feel the anger and some of the feelings she had in her body, which she wasn't used to doing. She had done a lot of years of meditation as a Zen student, but had never really focused on actually her direct experience of her emotions in her body. So she went and felt the her anger, where she felt it in the body. And in this situation, it disappeared. And then she got a little bit anxious about having disappeared because it was so important to her identity. So I asked her to feel the anxiety in her body, and she did, and disappeared. And then she said, you know, this is kind of frightening not to have these reference points. I don't know if I can do this. I don't think I can do this. I don't think I'm a very good meditator. I can't do this. So I said, oh, now bring your attention to that sense of fear and judgment about yourself as a meditator. And she did, and it disappeared. And I said, what's the problem? And she opened her eyes, looked at me in distrust. I mean, in a good way. You know, what am I buying into here? It was like this dream that a friend of mine had. Maybe it's a classic dream, but in his dream he was holding a poisonous snake by the neck, which is a safe thing to do. But he was afraid of letting go of it, because if he let go of the snake would bite him. So he was holding on, he didn't want to let go of it because it was going to bite. And so finally, in the dream, he did let go of it. And when he let go of it, it disappeared. So sometimes it works that way in our life too. And sometimes we have to be thorough about looking actually at what's actually going on, and not to get stuck in the concepts and ideas, the meaning we assign, or this means that it's not safe, or this means that it's always going to be this way. What it does mean is really trusting and relying on what our experience is right now. What is this right now? What is happening? What's the experience right now? This particular breath, this in-breath, this out-breath. Yesterday's breathing, yesterday's breath, yesterday's meditation, yesterday's concentration. It's just ideas and memories. Just what is this experience right now? The simplicity of this particular inhalation. It's very interesting that as soon as you start evaluating how our meditation is going and how many breaths we're able to follow through time, that we've actually separated ourselves a little bit from the actual immediate direct experience. As difficult as it actually is, in a sense, or challenging as it actually is, the practice is very, very simple. When you realize you don't have to compare it to past and future, but just this particular experience, this particular process of breathing right now, this particular in-breath, be there fully for that. No before and after. This particular exhalation, no before and after. And perhaps as you get more concentrated and stiller, perhaps you'll begin seeing how the breath itself is a constant process of change, and that you can actually stay there in touch with that process of change, and it'll help make your mind more malleable, more pliable. Now sometimes, as we stay with the breathing and the concentration gets strong, the breath becomes very, very subtle. And you might not be aware of many sensations at all for an in-breath, because it's so subtle and refined, the breath. Maybe all you're aware of is a little sense of pressure, oscillating, vibrating pressure. Maybe a teeny bit of movement, just a little bit of movement in in-breath, a little bit on the out-breath, just hardly perceptible. Some people get anxious and think, oh, I'm supposed to be aware of dozens of sensations every in-breath, and all I have is just a little sensation. It doesn't count for much. Our ability, as we get more concentrated, the breath usually gets more and more still and quiet. Sometimes it can just be a little, you don't even feel any movement at all, but just a little vibrating sense of pressure rises and passes. It isn't that we're looking for this to happen, or to make this happen, this kind of subtle breath. It's not necessarily a sign of good practice. But just as a warning that for those of you who might think that supposed to be one particular way, that you're willing to kind of just willing to trust your experience and just kind of go into it as your experience is, and just sense and feel it as it is, remembering that the Dharma is good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end. We can let go of things or fixations at the beginning, the middle, and end. At the beginning we get let go of certain category and kinds of attachments, maybe self-judgments, maybe to expectation, striving. And then in the middle, it's in a whole other category of clingings that we let go, more subtle. And maybe at the end, it's the most subtle of all attachments we let go of, maybe the attachment to self-concept, self-image. Be careful in the investigation of the breath and the details of actually how the sensations are experienced and felt, that you're not pushing yourself to try straining yourself to see something that you haven't seen yet. Now that you've heard the possibility of seeing the changing process nature, the rising and passing away, at the point that you don't want to strain at all, it's more like you want to wait, you want to allow this experience of change and impermanence to pop up at you. But just continuing to be mindful and concentrating as lovingly and devotedly as you can, moment by moment. When the mind is scattered and wanders off in thought a lot, that's just as much a process as anything else. That's the impermanent flow of things also. So maybe tuning into how things are constantly changing, even with your ability to your thinking and your mind wandering off and coming back, can be helpful to rest more. Maybe I shouldn't give away one of the trade secrets, but I think many of you know this already, is that one of the kind of ways in which longer retreats work, if you've done 10-day retreats before or others, is the first day things are going quite nicely. The second day things are going pretty awful, and it's the end of the world, and you should never have come. The third day things are nice. The fourth day there's bliss. The fifth day there's discouragement. The sixth day there's calm. The seventh day there's agitation. And after a while you catch on. Things are constantly changing. You don't need to have your retreat be any particular way. You just have to learn how to be graceful with the changes, kind of flow with the changes. See it as constantly changing, and not to jump to conclusion, oh, this is the way it is. And the more carefully we look, from a distance, things change over long periods of time. But if you look very carefully, you see it's changing constantly. If you look at the mountain, everybody realizes the mountains are impermanent. But from a distance, it seems like it takes eons for the mountain to wear down, to change. But if you look really, really closely put your face right up against the mountain, and you see the working of the ants and how they're moving their rocks around, or how the rain kind of washing the soil down, you see it's constantly changing, even the mountain. So it's the same idea, that as we get closer and closer to our lived experience, we see this wonderful, delightful play of impermanence and change, which is the nature of all compounded things. All things which are born pass away. All things that come into being arise and pass. That's enough for today. Please keep inclining your mind towards stillness, towards concentration, and see if you can begin appreciating how the breath is a process. And rest yourself in the process nature of the breathing. So may all of you be well and happy. And enjoy yourself here. And always remember to pay attention to the quality of your mind that's practicing. That the quality is not striving or pushing too hard or becoming too complacent.